Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. Well, as you probably know, I am traveling. I am working my way south, gradually heading back to Puerto Rico. And I should be touching down there on February the 1st, and so who knows how my communication will be from that point forward for a while, but I'm hoping for the best. Anyway, you know, it's a busy time, it's a fun time, it's an exciting time, because not only am I already working on my new book and putting the big event together in Las Vegas in May, but I am also producing this television series. We're in the early stages of development, and there's never a 100% guarantee that a TV series will actually make it to air. I mean, I have worked on projects before where we, you know, we shot the whole thing and spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then at the last minute, some network executives shut it down, and you just never know. But it's really interesting when I look back at some of the TV series that I have helped develop. And because I'm working on this new one, and I'm not allowed at this point to tell you what this new series is about, but it's a good one. I started looking back at some of the other things that I've pitched over the years. And one of the things was a show that I, to this day, think is such a great idea for a show. I'm amazed that none of the networks bit on it at the time. And now, this was 5 years ago, so maybe, you know, maybe now it would fly. I must tell you, this may sound a little immodest, but often my ideas seem to be ahead of their time. Like, I'll pitch something, and then, you know, 5 or 10 years later, it'll come on TV, and people always say, hey, you think they might have ripped you off? I don't know. But to me, the mark of a truly great TV series, especially if it's going to be nonfiction, is that as soon as you hear the title, you have a pretty good idea of what it's going to be. And you go, oh, I want to see that. You know, the title alone is, it tells you a lot. And traditionally, when you have an idea for a television show, you're supposed to just keep that top secret. You never talk about it. And so I'm going to break that standard or that rule or whatever, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about this show idea that I pitched 5 years ago that did not get picked up. And again, here you go. Two words. As soon as I tell you this, you're going to be like, oh yeah, that'll be a great show. Are you ready? The series is called, and this could be a series, or it could, you know, be a one-time special, even though they don't do that too much anymore. Here we go. Two words. Deathbed Confessions. And I went through, and I wrote up this great proposal for all kinds of amazing things that people revealed on their deathbed. And this is fascinating to me for a number of reasons. I mean, for one thing, you do have these accounts, which appeal to me, I guess, as a paranormal investigator, that tend to indicate that sometimes when people die and they're able to communicate right up until the last moments, that they really are moving into another place. I mean, one of my favorite set of last words came from Thomas Edison, the great inventor Thomas Edison. His last words, quote, "It's very beautiful over there," end quote. And then you have people like Steve Jobs, who just died not too long ago. And so his family was gathered around. And all of a sudden, Steve Jobs, here his last words, he goes, oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Then he slipped away. So you're like, wow, what was this guy seeing? And then you have some of these folks throughout history who have put a more, well, poetic spin on it, like Emily Dickinson. Her last words, quote, "I must go in. The fog is rising," end quote. You know, and so it's just really intriguing to think about some of these things that people who appear to keep their more or less right state of mind have to say, right as they are slipping into that state, that place. And yeah, you could, people who are skeptical about all the, you're just hallucinating, you're just seeing things, you know. It's like, how do you know? You haven't died. So I'm interested because of that, but also, you know, look, from the most practical point of view, when you are about to die, and you know you're about to die, because it seems like most people know, one way or another, they just have a feeling like, oh, shit, this is it, you know. When you're about to slip over, well, you know, at that point, there is nothing that can control you, really, other than your own ideas about what's appropriate behavior. So what I mean by that is it doesn't matter how rich you are. That suddenly becomes absolutely meaningless. It doesn't matter if your boss said, "You gotta show up for work tomorrow," you know, like, screw you, right? You know, it's like nothing can control you. And so you get to do what you feel is right. Even if that means confessing to some thing that you've been told must be kept a secret. And that's a really powerful concept if you take a moment and you think about it. And I also think that's where, you know, the whole idea of confession plays a role. You have people who are about to die and they say, "Look, I want to confess my sins and be blessed and forgiven." If I recall correctly, Constantine, Emperor Constantine, you know, he went through his whole life killing God knows how many people. But when he sensed that the end was there, you know, he wanted to confess and be forgiven and all that sort of. So anyway, what I'm getting at here is, I wrote this proposal with all these like really interesting, rich stories that I'd researched about people who had these profound deathbed confessions. And I just want to focus on one section of that in this podcast, and that is the section on UFOs. What a shocker. Because here are some things that you may not know. Now, obviously, I will stop and give a little disclaimer here. Like, look, I wasn't there when these people died. So I can't tell you with 110% certainty what happened. But it is my understanding from, you know, reading what the relatives had to say, and in some cases some recordings that were made, there are at least three moments in the history of ufology that stand out in my mind as being really interesting moments of deathbed confessions. And actually, I could go on and on, but the three that I really want to focus on here, I believe, all have to do with the Roswell incident. So, first one comes from Major Edwin Easley, who was the Provost Marshal at the Roswell base in 1947. That means he was kind of like the chief of police there. And as he lay dying, he apparently said to his relatives, after years and years of keeping a tight lip about this, he said, yes, that he participated in the recovery of an extraterrestrial spacecraft and crew. And he said, oh, the creatures. And then he died. So he didn't refer to them as humans or aliens or... He just said the creatures. And that's an interesting way of looking at it, isn't it? That we think that these beings look fairly humanoid, but to him, they weren't human enough. He called them creatures. And then we have a deathbed confession that came from, let's see. Oh, yeah, this fella, Cordell Hull. He was the Secretary of State under Franklin Roosevelt. And my understanding is that he, to this day, holds the record for being the longest-serving Secretary of State. I think it was like 11 years or something. And not only did he, just before he died, talk about what I'm about to tell you, but he even had a relative that he took to some area underground below Washington, D.C., and showed four upright glass containers that each held an alien body and also some type of a roundish looking crashed craft. And so, you know, he actually showed that to some people and then talked about that on his deathbed. And then, of course, we have Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso. Now, Philip J. Corso died in 1998, and 1 year before he died, he published his famous book, The Day After Roswell, and his may be the most explosive of all, because there's no doubt what he was claiming. I mean, he wrote a book where he said that he was one of the key figures in charge of taking technology from these, from the craft and helping to back engineer it and then take some of the technology and share it with some of the major corporations in the U.S., which helped contribute to the technological boom that we are living in right now. So everything from fiber optics to lasers to computer chips, I mean, all that stuff took a giant leap forward. And yet still, so much of that technology is a real mystery. And it reminds me of that New York Times article that came out not too long ago in which they interviewed one of these scientist who had been involved in back engineering stuff, and you know, he said something like, well, this is sort of along the lines of showing a garage door opener to Leonardo da Vinci. The first thing he's going to do is try to figure out what is this stuff, this plastic stuff. He's going to be a long way from getting into how the electromagnetic signals are being used to open your garage door. You know, so that's kind of where we are when faced with much of this technology. And so, you know, I could go on and on, and who knows, maybe someday this show will be properly made. And because I'm not talking about a show that just deals with UFOs, I mean, I have broken deathbed confessions into all kinds of different categories that I think would be cool for a TV series. But I was thinking about that in particular today because, you know, again, as I helped develop this new TV show that I created this one as well, I've been, you know, looking back at some of my other ideas from the past, and I thought, you know what, even if this show never gets made, I may as well talk about some of the deathbed confessions a little bit here. And you know, the Roswell thing, the secrecy there is falling apart. It's taken a while, but it'll eventually all come out. It really will. And that's why I've said this, and people probably think I'm exaggerating. I'm not. I swear to you. When you come to my event in Las Vegas this spring called Finding Your Magic / Hacking Reality, I'm going to show you. I'm going to take some of these pieces of debris that I have from Roswell. I'm going to put them in an electrostatic field and let you see for yourself what they do. You're going to see this for yourself. I'm really happy that so many people are excited about this event. I got an email today from a guy, I'll just use his first name, a guy named Dave. He said, you're right. He said, for one thing, I loved your podcast about free will. And he said, I absolutely believe that there are some people who are meant to be at this event in Vegas, and I'm one of them. You know, he's already got his ticket. And you, hopefully, will be also one of those people who is meant to be there, and I'm going to show you this and other things that blur the line between technology and magic in some ways. That's what I think. But more than that, it's just going to change the way that you are able to relate to your interaction with reality in general, this holographic reality that you can tap into. I got an email today from a fella, let's see, another one. I'm going to look at, okay, I'll just use his first name as well. His name is Jose. The email had the subject line, the wishing machine. Now, he bought one of these recently. And so I opened his email, and here is what it says. It works! Exclamation point. It works! Exclamation point. It works! Exclamation point. Thank you! Respectfully, Jose. He didn't even tell me what he was using it for or what happened. This guy's just so excited that all I can do is write, it works, it works, it works, you know. And that's why for every one person out there who contacts me who says, I'm not having any success with this, or I think this is BS or whatever, I have hundreds of messages like Jose's from people who are saying, this works. And I know that sometimes, though, to me, this stuff that I talk about, I get hands-on with it, and I do experiments with it, and then and because I have created a life that allows me to do that. And a lot of people don't have that time or opportunity, but I have... It's been a lot of hard work, but I've created a life that lets me do that. And so I kind of take for granted how some of this stuff works. And it might not be so easy for you unless you come and see in person how to do it. You can watch videos and you can read material, but this whole event in Las Vegas is about taking these things and... not only matching you up with what's going to work for you, but also showing you in person how to do many different techniques. And I'll be more specific about that in the near future. But actually, you know what? I wasn't going to do this, but I think I'm going to. I'm making an off-the-cuff decision, and I think what I'm going to do here is I'm going to tell you a little bit about the different types of personalities that are involved in using different types of methods. So... I'm looking this up right now to make sure I don't forget anything. Okay. So what I have basically come up with is 12 different types of personalities. I'm looking at them right now, and I've matched those 12 different types of personalities with 12 different methods. Now, to be honest with you, I only wanted to have 10 different types of personalities because I thought 10 was a nice round number. You have 10 fingers, you have 10 toes. But the more I started working my way through it, it ends up it's I couldn't get around it. It's going to be 12. I'm just going to, since you listen to this podcast, I was going to save this until I was a little farther or further down the line. But here are the different types of 12, I guess, techniques that I'm matching up with different personalities. One is called tech. One is called force. One is called divine. One is called seer. One is called spells. Next, I have RV. Next, PK. Next, dowser. Next, psionic. Next, wanderer. Then, scryer. And lastly, claro. Now, that probably doesn't mean a lot to you. You might recognize what some of those terms are referring to, but basically what I'm doing is I'm taking a specific personality type. You're going to go through a procedure where I take your personality. I'm going to match you up with these different versions. You're going to get to experiment and play with everything, but ultimately, if my theory here is correct, and I'm pretty darn sure it is, I'm going to be able to match you up with a system that works for you like crazy. And the cool thing is, since we're in Las Vegas, which is where people go out and try their luck, you're going to be able to go out and you're going to be able to gamble. You're going to be able to try your luck, and you're going to be able to exercise this. I mean, these are real practical techniques that you're going to be using. And all that is just, that's part of it. But also, it's surrounded by these amazing things that I want to share with you in person, like this debris that I've never shown before that was collected in Roswell, or like the Paracymatics sigils demonstration, or getting to listen to Colonel Dr. John Alexander talk about remote viewing and psychokinesis and just like. Or take a field trip, go see the haunted museum. So look, I wasn't even gonna get into all that, but the point is, this stuff that I talk about works, and there are people who wonder, like, well, how do you know all this? And I'm telling you, once again, it's because I have been self-employed since I was 18 years old. I work very, very hard. I work sometimes all night and then all day, and I do experiments and I do projects, and all I care about ultimately is what works. I'm not interested in sharing my philosophy with you. I'm not interested in telling you my biography or my autobiography or, I hear so many people are like, oh, let me tell you why I'm so special. Oh, here's a me. No, this is not about me. This is about you. This is about techniques. That's what interests me, is taking things that work and saying, okay, let me show you how this works, and let me prove it to you that this will work for you. Not everything works for everybody, though, and that's why this is such a special breakthrough, because this technique here that we're going to be working with, I'm telling you, it's going to change the way you view all this. So anyway, as usual, I'm tired. I got a lot of stuff going on here, and hopefully I'll be able to leave another podcast or two for you tomorrow night, maybe the next night, before I have to get ready to travel down there to the Caribbean. But this podcast is called Joshua P. Warren Daily, And if you go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find a link at the top of the page to my big event in Vegas. I hope that you'll click that link and you'll read about it, and you'll get even more information about how this is all going to work. And then also, of course, you'll find a link to this podcast. You can subscribe via various means, and you also can just follow me on Twitter, and I'll tweet when a new one is available. But, you know, speaking of Vegas, there are people who do this all the time who go to Vegas, remote viewers and people like that, and they go there and they work together and they clean house. And if you're one of those people who feels like David, you feel like you're meant to be there, do whatever it takes to get there, okay? Because it will change your life. And I know that I can say that to you right now, and you'll be like, oh, well, that just sounds like a nice sales pitch. Hey, look, I'm going to be there looking you in the eye. If I'm leading you astray, you know, you're not going to be very happy with me, and I know that. So that's why I'm telling you, do what you have to do, be there. Only 100 people get to do this. It's a one-time-only event. All right, that said, as usual, thank you for your interest, thank you for your support, and I will talk to you again soon.